Cyclone Nation. You are now tuned to the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast, presented by Mr. B Clothing. And now, here's your host, Chris Williams.
Seems like it's been a really long time since we've podcasted. It's been a couple of weeks. I was in Dallas last week for the Big 12 football media days. Brent Bloom, my podcasting partner here on the Mr. B Clothing podcast, of course, located down there at 1995 Northwest 86th Street. They're having sidewalk sales this week, by the way, people. Sidewalk sales. But Brent Bloom has been
really excited about those sidewalks.
They're the best. They're the best, Bloom, the sidewalk sale, because you can get the same stuff for like half off, which you're going to need to be doing after this wedding is over. You're blowing your life savings on this thing, Bloom.
Close.
No, but your life is about to change on Saturday. Instead of eating chicken McNuggets at 11 o'clock at night, just, you know, curled up in your bed in Shenandoah, Iowa, watching the Cardinals. I mean, you have a wife now. There's more to life than just Brent Bloom. Are you ready for this?
Now that you mention like that, I might back out. I want my fast food at 11 p.m. No, I'm ready. I'm excited.
Too late for that, buddy.
I'm ready to go.
You're not backing out of anything. I won't let you.
It's going to be a good time. So I know all the single ladies that listen to the podcast are...
The single ladies?
They're upset right now.
Rightfully so.
I console them by saying, well, we'll still be here.
Yeah.
For the podcast.
Well... It's going to be a great wedding.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, it's fun, you know, not to get too sappy, but having everybody from all stages of your life in one spot. That's kind of the fun part.
I will say that the Williams wedding day was definitely one of the best days of my life. Can't deny that. I'm trying to think of one that was better. It's a good time.
We had this could be good or bad, but we have tabbed Scott Sipker, the Iowa nice guy, as our wedding officiant.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So, we're giving him the keys to the car. I don't know if this is good or bad.
Why in your right mind would you do such a thing?
Well, we don't really have a minister or a place around here in central Iowa. So,
you go to Scott Sipker.
Sipker certified. Better than a judge.
Touche.
Sipker's going to have carte blanche, do what he wants. He told me he'd keep it cool.
Huh?
I was like, hey, do what you want, man. You're the Iowa nice guy.
Yes, he is.
So it'll be kind of people want his autograph. They won't even want to talk to me. They'll just want to talk to the nice guy.
They're just going to want their picture taken with the beard. Okay.
I might do that myself.
I will. Absolutely. We got a lot of football.
5 weeks away.
Yeah.
Four and a half.
32 days.
Crazy.
From the recording of this podcast, Iowa State, North Dakota State. Again, I want to shout out to our sponsor, Mr. B Clothing. I want to give a shout out as well, Bloom, to our football sponsor for the year. So all of the football coverage at CycloneFanatic.com this year is brought to you by our friends at Nebraska Furniture Mart. They are located in Iowa, Bloom. In Des Moines, Iowa.
There.
Yeah, a lot of people don't even know that it's there. So we're going to fill you in a lot about that great company here in the coming months at CycloneFanatic.com. Rob Gray, formerly of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, has come on board. He decided to join the Hack Blogger Nation here at Cyclone Fanatic. We're excited about that, to have a legitimate journalist as opposed to just us hacks on here just running our gaps every the production that we've put on for the last 5 years, it's a freaking miracle that we're still in business. And the fact that a guy like Rob would like to come on board.
Involuntarily did so.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't have to pull teeth or anything. So we're pumped about that. He starts on Media Day.
You know what's cool about Rob? Well, one, he's a great guy.
Yep.
But he's a really good writer, and I think he kind of got lost being at the Gazette, because when you write for the Eastern Iowa paper about Iowa State, you kind of get forgotten about. But he does some really quality stuff in the feature writing, which is something I really admire, someone who can really tell a story. The Fanatics are gonna love that guy.
That would be his strength.
He's gonna be fantastic. He'll dig in corners that we didn't know existed.
Yeah, and he's gonna do a lot of that "where are they now" type stuff that, you know, we've always wanted to do. But frankly, that takes a lot of time. That's hard. And to those who can pull that off and do it well, like Rob can, he had the most interesting piece of the entire 2013 calendar year, and it may have been early 2014, I guess, but on Daniel Adozie, last year.
Yep.
So we're looking forward to that. He will bring some much-needed diversity to our – because, you know, what we do is we'll come on here and we'll talk about your wedding, and, you know, and we'll make really just shallow, like, man, you know, that Cliff Kingsbury, man, he's a real ladies man. You know, but, you know, to get a actual legitimate journalist.
Like a journalist.
Yeah. No,
he's been one for 15 years.
Yeah, he was doing this when we were in diapers.
But for those who enjoy our nonsense, it also frees us up to do more of that.
Exactly.
So it's a win-win for everybody.
You know it. Big announcements coming down the pipe here in the next couple of weeks. I know a lot of people, every time we post a podcast, it feels like people are like, hey, we want more. You're going to get more. In fact, I hope we haven't done overboard with the amount of podcasting that's going to be going down here starting, well, probably mid-August or whatnot. But we'll make those announcements in a couple of weeks. Mr. B Clothing Podcast, let's start, Bloom, with some Big 12 football conversation. The Big 12 bloggers over at ESPN.com, so they've been making picks throughout the entire, the last couple of weeks or so. They got the clones. Now, if you would have told me, hey, Williams, they're going to go – They do not like Iowa State this year. They are not a fan of – I would have been like, oh, okay. So, like, I don't know, 3-9 again or possibly,
right.
You know, 4-8, two wins in the Big 12, maybe one win, worst case scenario. No! 0-9 in the Big 12. What is your reaction to that, my friend?
I'm surprised. I'm used to low expectations as an Iowa State guy. I think we all are.
Yeah.
But to pick for a donut is insulting.
The donut.
It really is insulting.
When they return all those starters,
right?
In the amount of starts,
I understand
on offense.
Where you say, "Well, Iowa State wasn't very good last year." They weren't very good. They still won two conference games.
Yes.
Let's at least give them a win. My gosh.
Yeah, you can at least allow them to just. What does it hurt to let them upset Texas Tech at home?
And you know what? I don't read into stuff like that, but now I that made me a little bit angry.
I'm really a little bit ticked off, are you?
Like, at least give them a win.
Yeah,
you're a Big 12 blogger. I know you have to, but then they pick all the games and they have Iowa State giving up 42 points to TCU, whose offense was worse than Iowa State's last year.
Yeah,
they're not gonna. TCU will not score. If TCU scores 42 points, I will shave an eyebrow on Iowa State.
Well, wait.
You can quote me on that on
back the truck
on July 28th, 29th.
You'll shave an eyebrow
if TCU scores 42. I will shave an eyebrow.
Okay, so. So I was in Dallas last week, and while I was not investigating the Kennedy assassination, I was covering the Big 12 Football Conference Media Days.
Yes.
And so I wrote down five teams who, even after the vast amount of studying I've done, which that's what I do in the summer, I'm fairly meticulous about reading the preseason magazines from front to back. And then I get down to Dallas, and then, you listen to them all, and you talk to the coaches and whatnot. But there are five teams, Bloom. Five.
Five out of the ten.
That I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue.
TCU one of those?
TCU is one of those. See, if you're a Phil Steele disciple, which I'm not, but Phil Steele believes that this is one of the great turnaround teams in college football this year.
I don't see it. Where's the quarterback?
Well, they've got the options.
Kid.
They've got Jokel, and they've got the Trevon Boykin.
Yeah,
if they want to go there. See, I'm not as down on Trevon Boykin as a lot of people. Bloom, I think that he just frankly didn't have anyone to throw the darn football
to. He still doesn't have anybody
to
throw to.
Correct.
They have not just found a bunch of weapons.
I'm not arguing that point whatsoever.
Iowa State has more weapons than TCU has.
I would agree with that. You got the best tight end in the Big 12, according to many people, and I think Quentin Bundridge is. Right up there in the
he's
a tier two wide receiver in the Big 12.
Who is your tier one Lockett from K-State?
Yeah, those type guys. He's not there yet.
He's not quite Lockett.
He's got to show that he can catch consistently,
which is important for a receiver.
You need to know how to catch the football.
I like Aaron Wimberly.
Yeah.
I think he's a very talented back.
But you gotta, they gotta use him right, which I think they'll use him much differently this year.
And stay healthy.
What about Devondre Neely?
I like Devondre Neely.
I think he may be. Yeah, I've always been high on him.
From a weapon standpoint, Iowa State has more weapons
Alan
than TCU.
Alan Lazard. You gonna go that route? Yeah. You gonna go down that
road? No, I think if he grabs 15 to 20 balls this year, that would be success.
Yeah, I would agree. Couple touchdowns. Yeah, two touchdowns.
He's going to
three
play.
Three touchdowns.
Are we pretty confident Alan Lazard is going to play?
Pretty confident. I'm not as Paul Rhodes put all in on that, but I'm close. Because, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen in fall camp and whatnot.
Sure.
But
I think Iowa State is their best offense since Seneca left.
Whoa.
Seriously.
Better than the Meyer Blyth,
yes.
2005 stuff?
Statistic-wise, it would be better than that.
Well, yeah, statistic-wise, but they're playing a much faster tempo, too.
I mean,
they're going to have a lot more snaps.
I don't know if that offense was solid.
And think about the defense. I mean, the offense is going to be on the field a lot because right. The defense is going to give up a lot of, like, 80-yard bombs and stuff, won't they?
I think this – we hope
big
not.
Runs.
We hope not.
I hope not. I'm just thinking out loud.
I trust Wally Burnham more than most.
So do I. And that's why my whole point to the season, and I've been trying to – it's not the defense. Everybody's freaking out about the defense. I get it. The line is a bit peculiar at this point in time. But you know what to expect defensively this year from Iowa State. Get that through your skull. They're not going to be very good. So the offense, they can't be better than last year. They got to be exponentially better than last year. That's what I'm looking forward to in fall camp.
The defensive line is where everyone's you have to stop and you go, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
However, I do not think they can be. Can they be worse defensive line than last year? Because game one, they had moved David Irving the week before.
It reeked of desperation.
And he started a game, and he had never played
defense. Rodney Coe wasn't very good until halfway through the season.
Didn't know where he was going.
But he was good at the end of the year.
But I think defensive ends, they're okay. I like Morrissey a lot. I think he's an all Big 12 guy.
Really, though? Or is he just Iowa State's best defensive end?
I think he's pretty good. I think he
can
be
pretty
good.
I think he's all right. I don't think that if he played for Oklahoma, he would start.
No.
That maybe that's a bad example.
But in the history of Iowa State, it's like they've had overwhelming defense. Just need to have – I keep going back to the 09 defense. Had a bunch of just guys, and they were pretty good. Now, the schedule was not nearly as daunting as it is this year.
They were in the Big 12 North, and they had four non-cons.
Yeah, but it's just, if they're buying in and they believe and they're in the right spot, which is the whole point of Wally Burnham, and they can get turnovers, which they didn't get as many turnovers they usually did last year. I think they got 18 for the season. If they can get a couple more turnovers, the Burnham defense is, again, it's that stupid cliche, but it's the bend but don't break. If they can do that...
God.
And not
so
not
so
give
sick
up.
Of hearing that.
Well, but it's true. That's what they do. They
I know
give up,
that.
They give up 450 yards a game, and
that's
they
exactly
hope that
they
when
do.
You get to the red zone, you turn the ball over.
Yep, and they did that for a while.
They hung in there for a little bit.
Yeah. The defense was not the problem last year, though. I mean,
it
think
was the offense getting off the field too soon.
Think back to that Texas Tech game. You know what I mean? I mean, that's a perfect example of that was not – and I remember doing Cyclone Reaction that day, and Jack Whitford and I were just going mad – of all the calls blaming the defense for that. I mean, they had 200 yards of offense.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I went back and looked because I was getting ready for my preview column. There was a three-game stretch. It was the Tech game and the two after that where Iowa State offensively went three and out or turned the ball over on 60% of their possessions.
Oh, my gosh.
That's not getting a first down. Not a first down in 60% of their drives in that three-game stretch.
Is that the worst offense in modern-day Iowa State football history?
It was brutal. That
is it worse than 2003's offense?
No.
No?
No, I mean, that,
that was that was a thing. That was our freshman year.
That was bad. Oof. They couldn't do anything. No. At least Wimberly was serviceable. That 0-3.
The Tulsa game saved him, though.
It did. And he was good in Texas. I thought the offense was okay in Texas.
It wasn't bad. But and then the end of the year, they were playing pretty well.
In that stretch, though, where things got so bad, it was, that Tech-Baylor Oklahoma State stretch.
Yeah.
Where things just fell off the rails.
Yeah.
They couldn't move the ball at all. And so the defense's numbers were atrocious because of that. But if the offense gets at least a couple first downs, you're sucking, 40, 50 yards off some of those drives. And again, this defense is not going to be – Bama from 3 years ago. But I don't – the people saying they're going to give up 45 and 50 points a game, I think is unfair as well.
Yeah, I don't
know. They're not going to be that bad.
I don't know if Wally can allow that. I don't know if it's even – we'll see. So, TCU
– point is, TCU, there's no way to score 42 points on Iowa State. I think they're a very average ball club.
Well, okay, because this is why I don't know.
I think some most of the Big 12's average, actually.
I agree with you, because I think you were the first one to bring this up like a month or two ago when we were talking about that Monday musings I wrote about, just deal with the tough schedule. I'm tired of hearing about it, right?
Yeah.
And
not as tough this year.
Well, I'm going through these teams, Bloom, and I think, and I'm a little bit scorned towards TCU after last year.
You picked them to win it all.
I picked them to win the Big 12. Well, they in my defense, how many starters did they lose for crimes or injuries or whatever? It was not – when I made that prediction, it was a very different team than the one that took the field to kick off the 2013 season. All right? I admit I was wrong, and it was foolish to pick TCU. But, this blank happens. Devontae Fields is gone now.
Yep.
So, I'm down on TCU. I think they're – blatantly overrated. Another team I think is blatantly overrated is Texas Tech. I don't understand the love for Texas Tech after they implode at the end of last year. Brent, they've got to do the summer JUCO thing just like Iowa State does this year. These are not spring JUCOs. These are summer JUCOs. And we all know how that is. Look, Iowa State doesn't even have two of them on campus right now, and another one just blew out his knee. You cannot rely on these guys to win in the Big 12 Conference if they're coming in late. How Bill Snyder does this year after year is beyond me, but that's a one-time – that's Bill Snyder is an anomaly in Manhattan, Kansas, with how he deals with these guys. I'm looking at Texas Tech. They lost two quarterbacks. So, Davis Webb, man, your chips are all in the table on Davis Webb. And what if he's not? What if he's not great?
And he loses their safety valve in Jason Morrow, who I think was one of the nation's best tight ends, if not the nation's best tight end.
Eric Ward?
Eric Ward's gone, another big receiver. They've got some receivers, but they're all little guys.
Yeah, Tech is, to me, and I don't think Kingsbury's this – I think he could be a good coach someday, but what has he proven in his head coaching career to make us think that this team could win eight games?
If he doesn't have Case Keenum at Houston and Johnny Manziel at A&M, what do we think of Cliff Kingsbury? Is that Kingsbury or is that the talent? And I think that's a question because right now that's what he's living on, his reputation.
I think it's the talent, though, because both of the – I mean, Manziel goes on to win a Heisman.
Without him.
Keenum was good in the NFL when
he
played last
year. He played a little bit last
year. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't good, but, I mean, he was all right. He's an NFL quarterback. He's a backup quarterback in the NFL.
If Kingsbury looks like Charlie Weiss, what do we think?
I'll be honest. He's not the head coach.
Well, no, he's not. And last year, like you said, they imploded. They won their bowl game, which everybody's – against a good Arizona State team.
Yeah, but Oklahoma beat Alabama, too. And Oklahoma's not better the program than Alabama. I'm sorry.
But prior to that, Texas Tech lost their final six Big 12 games.
Yeah.
Imploded. Yeah, just totally blew up. And they lost seven starters on defense.
Now, they did do some – I mean, they went into Norman, played a tough game. Yeah. They had a lot of those Iowa State-type games where they, it was close, but they didn't quite pull it out. So it'd be hypocritical of us to talk about Iowa State's close losses and not reference – but this – I mean, this Texas Tech team only beat Iowa State by seven last year, Brent.
And that was, and they got, I would say, what, 200 yards of offense?
Yes.
So – it's that's a winnable game in Ames.
That's a winnable
game.
That's
a very winnable game.
That's a win. I'm marking it down. That's a win. Texas, man. I mean,
who knows?
Texas just drives me mad. I have no idea what to expect from the Texas Longhorns. Now, I'm down in Dallas with Trey Scott from AllCyclones.com. And he's a Texas grad, right?
Absolutely.
Trey's telling me, man, the buzz is there. The Longhorns think that this is it, that this is the turnaround. They're not even waiting for a rebuilding year.
They just lost five guys last week.
That was before that, yeah. This conversation took place before the mass exodus from Austin.
They've always had talent. I found it fascinating.
In more ways than one.
Yeah, a lot of talent in Austin. they haven't had an offensive lineman drafted since 2007.
Where do you come up with that? Where did you look that up, or did you read that somewhere?
Somewhere.
You read it somewhere else. Okay.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The Texas Longhorns. Iowa State has had like three more NFL offensive linemen than they have. and that's been their biggest problem, I think, is the line play. And they got the Oklahoma State offensive line coach to come there, which I think is a hit on Oklahoma State. But in 1 year, talent they've had, I just –
Let me ask
that's
you.
A lot. That's a big turnaround for 1 year.
Let me ask you this.
With the new system.
You got a Big 12 ballot in front of you.
I don't put Texas in the top four.
So you put Kansas State ahead of Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did too. Well, no, I didn't. But that was. But now, I will do that now after the dismissals and the distractions. Now my tune has changed on Texas, and it has nothing to do with Charlie Strong. I think he's a good coach. I think he's going to bring the program back.
It's going to take a little bit, though.
Yeah, now I'm watching how this is all unfolding, and I'm thinking my mind has changed in the last week on the Longhorns. I think they're okay. I think they're 8-4. They're 9-3-ish. I don't see them making any sort of a dark horse run at the title.
No, they're not getting in that top four conversation of the national semifinals, which is weird to say now.
Yeah.
Now you got to talk about the top four seeds.
It's not
that's
real
cool.
to me. It's not real
it's
to
really
me.
Cool, though.
It's not real to me. I cannot fathom what this is even existing.
The playoff is here.
Yeah, I still don't understand. I understand it, but I still cannot comprehend that this is actually going to go down.
Oklahoma, Baylor, clear top two.
Yeah.
We agree on that.
Yeah, and the schedule, Baylor, Oklahoma's schedule, all their hard games are at home.
Yeah, they're going to be good. Well, they should be good. But again, Bob Stoops, every time he's picked to win a national championship, which some are, they fall on their face.
Yeah, they're 10-2.
And falling on their face is 10-2.
They'll go 10-2. Okay, I got two other teams in my five. I have no idea what to expect out of them in the Big 12.
Is Iowa State one of those?
Yep, Iowa State's one of them.
I don't either.
I mean, you know, our buddy Ryan Hallen on Twitter posed the question to us.
Mm-hmm.
Would you, if you had $100, would you?
It was $100,000.
It was $100,000?
Which we both had.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Really? I thought it was $100.
We're using Adam Gray's money.
This is a game changer. Mm-hmm. He goes, would you pick Iowa State to go 2-10 or 6-6? Now, that's an interesting question because you cannot go in between. It has to be one of the two. We both said 6-6. They were pretty bad last year when you consider all the circumstances. They were playing guys on the offensive line who had no business playing because of injuries. They were breaking in a new quarterback who their starting quarterback was hurt. It was just a disaster. And then you had I like Courtney Messingham a lot, but I think Mark Mangino is a clear step up from a resume standpoint than Courtney Messingham was, to put it nicely. So for to me, to imagine them being worse. Now I know that I didn't mention defense, but I already made my point. This is the Big 12, you know, as Dan Hawkins once put it, is Division I football. You have to score points. That's the key, because if you're scoring points, your offense is on the field and your defense isn't out there, you know, getting its blood sucked by a vampire every Saturday afternoon.
And I think offensively, the Big 12 will be – they were down last year.
They'll be much better.
You think they'll be better this year?
All those quarterbacks have experience now.
That's a good point. But we're not going to be at that level 2-3 years ago when you had your Whedons and you had your, you know, you had your RG3s. That 2011, if you look back at that group of offensive talent, it was unbelievable with what the Big 12 produced. And that last year – they were near Big Ten levels of offense. It was close between the two leagues. Now, you had a really good Baylor team that was the outlier, but everybody else was more towards the middle of the pack. Oklahoma State still produced some offense. But if Iowa State can get up to 30 points per game, which I think should be the number to circle, it's tough to do. They haven't done it since a long time. But if you get to 30 points, you can be competitive in every single game.
Last team
maybe
on
not,
the list.
Maybe not Baylor and Texas.
Who's the last team on my list?
Oklahoma State.
Yep, you nailed it.
Nobody knows about Oklahoma State either.
Well, it's an interesting situation because they lose 28 seniors. They lose seven
That's
starters.
That's a lot of seniors.
Yeah, the winningest group in Oklahoma State history.
And good seniors, too.
Yeah, seven starters.
Gilbert. And,
on defense.
Yeah.
This is a good group, Bloom. But at the same time, is it really fair to just say, well, they're done? Because it's, you know, Mike Gundy, I think, has deserved our respect. I think he's earned it.
You were telling me he was a little bit grumpy.
Yeah, he was a little bit snooty down there in Dallas.
I don't think
he really wanted to be there. But he's kind of like that towards the media anyways. But, you know, I saw Randy Peterson picked Iowa State to win that game. That's a little bit bold, I think, to pick a win in Stillwater. I don't think it's crazy, though. If you were to ask me for a Paul Rhodes special this year, and TCU are the two that I would go with, but I don't think TCU would be that crazy of an upset. I'm with you on the Horned Frog. So keep an eye on that game in Stillwater, Bloom.
I almost wish Oklahoma and Oklahoma State were flipped home and away this year.
Yeah.
Because Oklahoma's going to be tough wherever you play them.
Yeah, you know. as far as I'm concerned, I'll play Oklahoma at home or on the road every year and then just keep getting the other teams at home.
Right.
Because Iowa State's not going to beat Oklahoma. If that happens in my lifetime, I've always said, too, that I'll never see the Vikings. They won't play in a Super Bowl, let alone win one, in my lifetime. It will not happen. I have come to that conclusion, and I'm fine with it.
One win against the Sooners since 1961.
In 90. Yeah.
Jim Walden won down there.
The most unlikely. And that's my point. Like, what happens first, a Vikings Super Bowl appearance or Iowa State beats Oklahoma in football?
If they beat them this year, that's a Paul Rhodes special.
That's like, yeah. It's like a Paul Rhodes extra value meal. That'd be incredible.
They haven't defeated Oklahoma at home since Jack Rice Stadium was built.
Why should I believe that Iowa State will ever beat Oklahoma in football? And I'm not even trying to be mean here. No, I'm just saying, I'm looking at the numbers, and there's no reason to believe it will happen.
2 years ago, they were competitive for a half.
Do you remember when Chizik, they almost beat them?
Yeah, they
almost
did.
Beat them with
that
Chizik.
That was the Sam Bradford team.
Yeah.
It was 7-3 at halftime.
I remember sitting with my dad on, like, the 10-yard line, and Jim Ross from the WWE was right in front
of
us the whole time.
JR.
Yep. I saw him coming out of an outhouse.
That's JR's music.
Yeah, that's a weird segue.
Who is the cornerback for Iowa State? Bell. Bell had an interception that game.
Bell?
Was it Allen Bell?
I believe it was Allen Bell.
Allen Bell. And he was carried like five tacklers.
I refer to that as the John Narcisse era of Iowa State football. Because I wasn't covering Iowa State. I got out. I was writing for PsychOneReport.com while I was working.
This is the J.J. Bass era.
Yeah. Yeah, I got out there for a while to – I did not really cover the Chiz era very, very closely.
Ken Shepard talking about weight training?
Yeah, I was gone for all that. All right, let's move on. Big 12 topic right here, Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah, calm down, Jim.
Hey, Jimbo was very clear earlier in the week that he does not believe. I don't even know if he meant that it wasn't fair that the Big 12 doesn't play a championship game. But I agree with his point. I think his overall point is that if we're all going to be in this playoff together, we all need to be playing the same number of games. His point is that let's say the ACC championship game, that's a playoff game before the playoff, because if you lose that playoff, you're not going to get into the other playoff. And with the Big 12 not doing that, it creates an advantage. Now, vice versa, you know, I guess from Oklahoma's standpoint, they basically are playing an 8-game, and then they have Kansas. But in the same token, you know, 9 league games is a challenge amongst itself. What do you think about it? Is the Big 12 wrong or right here? Who has it right and who has it wrong?
There's not a right or a wrong. The Big 12 doesn't get to play Wake Forest and garbage that they play every year. I looked at Florida State's schedule today. They'll be favored by 2 or more touchdowns in every single game this year.
Is it because they're that good?
Well, I think it's because they're good, but they don't play anybody.
Yeah.
At least Texas and Oklahoma have to play each other. And yeah. I know, okay, they add Clemson. Clemson's good in the – that's a decent team. But
Clemson is Kansas State.
Decent.
Clemson is Kansas State.
And I know they added, you know, Notre Dame. They play Notre Dame this year. It's okay. I mean, they're solid, but don't tell me about – scheduling inequity when you're in the ACC and you feasted on all this garbage teams for so long and then complain that the Big 12 doesn't have an extra game. Well, they have an extra game when they get a beat up on Syracuse.
The thing about Oklahoma, they schedule tough.
Texas is scheduled okay. I mean, they went on the road to Mississippi a couple years ago. I don't know. It's up to the committee to decide, and that's why I'm glad that it's not just numbers.
It's not just a bunch of sports writers now.
And it's not just computers that decided. There's a
Condoleezza
group
Rice,
of people who get to decide.
Condi.
And, you know, it'll be fascinating to see if they hold it against the Big 12 if it comes down to that. But my thing is, if you go undefeated in the Big 12, barring catastrophe in the non-conference, you will get 1 of 4 spots.
I'd feel a lot better if the Big 12 had 12 teams.
But
I know the whole one true champion, Kevin Durant, never played names. But I'm just saying, I'd feel better if they had 12 teams.
Forgetting one of the, I maintain
no,
if you
just security wise and everything. I'm still not. This realignment deal is. There were rumblings down there.
It is still a blast for me to play every single team every year. That's great.
I like it as a fan.
As a fan,
but
it's
when
great.
Everybody else, your other, are doing one, you're one of five.
I know.
Let's join. Just join the group.
But sometimes
you have to give in to the man. I'm sorry.
I don't think it's impacted them yet. I don't think it will in the future either.
We'll see.
I really don't.
Art Briles, the line of Media Day last week, he was asked about his schedule. I'm actually writing a column about that. I'm saying lay off of Art, because his point is if we go 9-0 in this league, they're not leaving us out. Meaning he runs through his Patsy non-conference schedule.
And they shouldn't leave him out.
If Baylor is 12-0, even with the Patsy non-conference schedule, they will be in the championship. And I agree with Art.
Now, the only way they're not is if Alabama goes undefeated.
Okay.
And wins the SEC championship. Okay? So they got one spot. That's a lock.
Yep.
If the SEC, whoever's in the SEC, goes undefeated and wins their championship, almost a lock. I think we can say that right now.
Absolutely.
The Pac-12's in the same boat. If a Oregon or a UCLA runs the table, USC runs the table, and wins the Pac-12, I think they're probably automatically in.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get into the weird situation. ACC right now, Florida State, probably them too. And so if all those teams go undefeated now.
So then it's the Big Ten and the Big
12. So now it's the Big Ten against the Big 12. Because the other, you know, the Big East or whatever they're called, the American.
Yeah. America.
No. They're not a factor. So do you take an undefeated Baylor? Do you take an undefeated Michigan State? And I think that's what it's going to come down to.
And they're going
to
have that championship.
I don't believe that championship's the deciding factor at that point.
I don't believe it's a deciding factor, but I think it's a factor.
Them beating Nebraska in a championship game is a big deal. What if they beat Iowa? What if they beat Iowa in the championship game? Does that really help them?
Well, I mean,
they played Rutgers,
there's
this
a
year.
Lot of hypothetical going on here. I mean, I agree with you. The Big 12 strength of schedule overall, I think, will be better than the Big 10.
So if you add, let's say the Big 12 adds two teams. I mean, let's say you add BYU and I don't know, Colorado State, right?
They're not adding Colorado State. Don't give me that garbage.
Whoever. And you add, so you add two.
Actually, that is one. Tulane.
You add two.
You got a TV. Okay. Eyeballs, baby. Eyeballs.
You got to go to New Orleans?
Yep.
What is that? So that gives you a championship game? Okay. That doesn't add to the prestige of the league. I think that would hurt the prestige of the league.
I think adding BYU would be a good, solid addition for the Big 12.
I disagree.
But they are not interested in going west from what I've heard. I don't think they're interested in going east either.
So if you want to expand, where do you expand?
There's nowhere
to expand.
I'm not saying like now that the Big 12 should go raid some mid-major. That's not what I'm saying is at this point I would feel more comfortable if they were at 12 for the security of the league going forward. Listen, I'm not saying doomsday is coming. I don't believe that. The grant of rights is out there, et cetera. But what I don't want to see is the Big 12 become the black sheep of the Big 5. Get, you know, 2-3 years go by and the Big 12 does get snubbed, and all of a sudden, you know, maybe Texas starts looking around because they think, man, so league isn't getting much respect. What can we do about this?
Yeah.
Bloom, you know me as well as any. I'm sick, man. Like, I sit around at night after my wife goes to bed and I'm reading these messages. I'm sick. Like, I take everything and I overanalyze it. I do this with everything. Like, what am I having for dinner tonight? I'll analyze that for like 4 hours. So you got to know that I've been sitting around thinking about this Big 12 thing for weeks now. And I just would feel more comfortable if they looked like everybody else. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm with you. I like playing everybody. It's fun. One true champion. Giddy up. But that doesn't make me feel comfortable about 5 years from now.
If there's 3 years in a row where the Big 12 gets snubbed because of that, I think they add a couple of teams pretty quickly.
Who are they at? BYU? But they don't play on Sundays. But their coach is out there pandering, trying to get in the league.
You invite Missouri back?
They wouldn't take it. SEC Network. Kidding me?
I don't know where you
SMU?
Would
go. That doesn't add you any eyeballs.
Nope.
But it solidifies the whole Texas thing.
Tulsa.
Well, let's think about the American. UConn?
Nope.
Cincinnati?
Maybe. Oof.
That's the thing. Like, if
try and go get Clemson.
Here's what's good for the Big 12 is if they expand this playoff to 8 teams. That would be much better.
Now that would be then you're set.
That would be much better for the Big 12 because then a Texas doesn't really have. Now they're like, wow, we get to run the show. We get to play Kansas every year. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't think that they freak out at that point.
Right.
It's a fascinating conversation though because you have Baylor on one hand openly saying, you know what, I'm going to play Morgan State, and I'm going to kick the crap out of them. And if I go 9-0, I'm still going to make it. But then you have Texas and Oklahoma who appear to be scheduling up to play for national championships. Is this a case of Baylor just, you know, they're the new kid on the block? They've never really been here before.
I wonder. Yeah. But then, still, if you beat Texas and Oklahoma.
But Texas is an 8-4 team?
Yeah.
More than the same Texas 10 years ago.
If you run the table in the Big 12, you get a playoff spot.
With a non-con loss? That's assuming you're undefeated in the non-conference.
Right.
I agree with Art Briles, by the way. I agree with Art Briles.
If they get snubbed by one of those big – so if Michigan State would get the nod over them, I think the Big 12 has to reconsider that quickly. But keep in mind, they still have that arrangement with the SEC for the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
That they will get at least a team in that big.
Yeah, that doesn't mean.
But
anything.
That doesn't really do it.
That means nothing. Playing for national titles.
That is crazy. There's going to be a 4-team playoff.
Yeah,
it's going to be fascinating.
I still don't believe it. All right, we're having our football party where we're giving away season tickets. We're going to be, I believe, giving away. You know, one of those neon Iowa State lights.
Oh.
Yeah, the bar lights.
Where's the party?
Benchwarmers, on August 23rd. We're giving away season tickets. We did this last year. I love our recruiting party, but I think this was the most fun I've ever had at a Cyclone Fanatic
party.
Legit,
like all six games.
Yep.
Seven games.
My boy Chris English, who's singing at your wedding on Saturday.
Yeah.
He and his band are coming. They're going to play some country western for us.
He's crazy talented.
Talented
good
guy. Dude. Yep. August 23rd, Benchwarmers.
A bunch of Coors lights. Bush lights on tap.
Come on. That's a different company. What is your problem? Is your mind even on the podcast?
I'm 4,000 different places.
A couple other quick topics before we go. We got to cut this a little bit short because Bloom had informed me before we began that he has to go to Hobby Lobby. Where I'm this is a true story, and if my family is listening or they can actually vouch for this, but when we got married. We being my wife and I, not you.
Right.
The insane amount of trips to Hobby Lobby really started wearing on me. Like mentally was beating me down. I came up with the nickname anybody who knows me in that circle, when they refer to Hobby Lobby, the only way I will acknowledge it is that they call it the seventh circle of hell. And I know we've talked about this on the podcast before.
The Hobby Lobby's gotten some love.
Yeah, because I've gotten like tweets with guys. They'll like tweet me the Hobby Lobby sign with hashtag seventh circle of hell. And I'm not kidding. I've not stepped foot back in that place since I got married. And whenever we have to go to the one down on Merle Hay, I go to that little pizza joint and have a beer.
I might have to do that because that's where I'm going after this. The quick talk for another half hour. I don't want to go.
Oh, and Crystal's meeting you there?
No, I'm going to have to run the errand.
Go
by
yourself? You have to go to Hobby Lobby on Merle Hay by yourself.
Dangerous.
The seventh circle of hell.
If I don't make it. A wedding anymore is the excuse to have Pinterest projects.
Ugh.
That's what it is. And Instagram photos.
Oh, the Pinterest. So, Paul Rhodes. I want to have a quick conversation here. And frankly, we probably should have let. This is a giant topic. But we're going to have to condense it to about 5 minutes. I'm getting annoyed would be a strong word. I'm getting a little bit tired of, you know, every column one of us writes or that has anything positive to do with the sport of football at all. Mm-hmm. That crew jumps in and hammers Rhodes.
You're getting a lot of that?
Yeah.
I'm not paying attention.
Not a ton. But there's a healthy amount of it. Do you think this guy in reality statistically had the best 5 years of a head coach to start at Iowa State in history? Did he not?
Well, they had that tweet, but then there was some argument about.
Oh, they were wrong?
Johnny Majors and Earl Bruce, percentage wise, were. I don't know, but I understand. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Johnny Majors and Earl Bruce weren't playing the nine game conference schedule. Like, do you think Rhodes is underappreciated?
No, I don't.
You don't think so? No. I'm not saying that I do either. I'm just I think it's a I think he's getting too much heat right now in the offseason.
Yeah, but I think the heat's coming from a select group.
Just a small minority.
Because they're still selling tickets like crazy.
Yeah.
And I would say the majority of Iowa State fans love Paul Rhodes. Now there's some who are starting to fall off the wagon. And
they
after
need
3-9, that's what happens. They like need that, that's okay.
They need to show some progress.
They
this
have
year.
To. They and they need to. You're right. They can't have a Baylor game like that.
No.
That was the tipping point.
No, you know what the key is, Bloom. Forget Baylor. It's North Dakota State this year.
Well, that's the biggest game of the year by far.
You can't. If Who's anybody that? Wants to talk about possible coaching changes or any, that's where it starts because you can't lose to an FCS team 2 years in a row. Nobody can in the Big 12.
No, and even if he does lose that, I don't. They're not going to fire him on
spot. I don't believe so either. But
it's
I'm
a
saying
big game.
You cannot entertain that conversation until that is the game. Well, if he wins that game, I think he's. You lose that game, and all of a sudden, I think that becomes a legitimate conversation. I don't think it's. I don't think they will fire him. I think he has this year and next for sure. But to me, like that's the big one right there.
That's not going to be a fun game to coach in.
It's not going to be a fun game to broadcast. It's not going to be fun for anybody. It's going to be a very
It's a high stress. It really yeah. It's weird to say that.
Everything
but it is.
To lose.
There's a lot to lose.
Nothing
in the
first to
game.
Gain.
I'm nervous thinking about that
it's
game.
It's like Hoiberg has to feel coaching against McCaffrey in basketball. Everything to lose. That was just trolling Hawk fans, by the way. You didn't give me the reaction.
No, it worked. Well, I was just like, oh,
just jabbing at y'all. I know you're out there listening.
No, but that's a scary game. Like that normally you get well, the first game's always scary because normally it's a game that you should win, and that's when Iowa State in those types of situations, it makes me nervous. It used to make me nervous in basketball, not as much now, but in football, it's scary as heck. That said, as a favorite, which I think they should be favored against North Dakota State, Paul Rhodes is 14-4. Usually takes care of business. Now, the UNI game notwithstanding. But most of the other times when they've been favored, they win. And North Dakota State has to replace a head coach and a bunch of seniors. And as a Big 12 team, we always say that, but they beat K-State last year too. It's a nerve-wracking game. But it's not like Iowa State won't be paying attention to them because they realize what's on the line.
Call your shot.
For that game?
Yeah.
31-20. Clones.
All right. I'm good with that.
Everybody realizes it. Offensively, has to be better than last year. And I don't know a lot about North Dakota State yet, but the focus will be there. Good. I mean, I like the 11 a.m. or get it done with.
I do too. We'll have a couple cold beers that night and watch some football.
If there's a time to play them early. You don't get nervous from sitting around all day.
That might be I am seriously contemplating picking Iowa State to beat Kansas State.
You're going to play them week two.
And they're so due against them. Although last year I think kind of proved.
Well, that opposite. Was in the middle of the train derailment,
yeah,
though.
Yeah,
they couldn't.
That was really bad.
That week they wouldn't have beat anybody.
Brent, that was really bad. We traveled down to that game together. And, I mean – that stadium, like I mean, just talk about total depletion.
As bad as the Baylor game was, the K-State game wasn't much better last year.
And that was the game where Paul got real snippy with reporters. Yep. Like everybody, like the whole vibe was really bad after
bitter,
that game.
Bitter taste.
And you know, when you see what we saw that day, in person, you see the reactions, everything combined. The fact that they won their last two, I don't care who they were playing, is somewhat remarkable. It really is. Is down as everybody was. Mm-hmm. The fact that they could rebound and do that, that's encouraging for this year.
And almost beat TCU.
Yeah.
And were competitive with Oklahoma for a half, and they just fell apart in the second half. It's just, Rhodes, he's we're forgetting that he's done turnarounds before.
Yep.
He's kept them competitive in games they were never competitive in. And
I
think that's more the norm than last year. I really do.
You know what the biggest mistake Paul Rhodes made last year was?
Well, his biggest mistake was keeping it internal and hiring Courtney Messingham, but continue.
No, I'm talking last year.
Oh, last year.
Just last year. You know what his biggest mistake was? Expectations were just too high. Certain offseason quotes people held on to.
The whole "we're the most talented" thing.
You know, I think in this year, you're not hearing any of that. I think Paul may have learned, you know, in 2013, as it was, people will, they will remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the whole, you know, 3 bowl games in 4 years, and I think people's expectations were way too high, ours included.
Yeah,
going into last year.
Fully admit.
And that, and then when they didn't meet those, they clearly, there was the stretch that we talked about. You lost to an FCS team. And it was, you know, the whole world imploded is what it seemed like. And I feel like this year, the fact that you have fans as down as they are, the fact that ESPN just picked you to go 0-9,
yep.
This is the best case scenario if I'm Rhodes. I want expectations as low as possible. And it's a fine line because as a coach, you have to promote your program.
Sure.
You can't be like, man, we're not going to be very good. But I think that he was – honestly, like, he was pumped up about last year, and I guess that's what the coach should be. But a couple of those quotes people just held on to. And to me, like, that's the biggest mistake is the expectations were just too high. They were not they were not realistic going into last year.
But looking back, if you remember some of the interviews with Wally – in the preseason.
I mean, he was a beaten man.
Yeah. That should have been a good indicator of, oh.
How'd practice go today, coach? I've seen better.
You know, we always thought it was just Wally being Wally. It was
Wally
telling the truth.
All right.
And then Shane doing this.
Gosh.
Poor guy.
I love Shane.
I just think that, you know, you're right. This is – the expectations aren't there, but I'm –
that's good.
Four and a half weeks out, I wish they were playing Saturday.
Just like my buddy, it's like my buddy Shaner used to say in college: you lower your standards, you up your average.
It's a motto we can all live by.
Bloom, your standards have always been very high, and you're gonna knock one out of the park on Saturday. Don't get too nervous.
Are
you nervous?
I'm not. No, I'm okay.
Are you?
I'm all right. I'm not, I don't really have to do. I just have to show up and
you guys lucked
say,
out now. You're getting married in a barn, and it's going to be like 80 degrees in August.
McIntyre told us the weather would be good.
Brett McIntyre?
Mega Doppler McIntyre.
Is he going to be there?
He will be.
Will he have a smartphone with radar?
I assume he'll give us the updates throughout the night, make sure the weather is good.
It's very advantageous to have a close friend be a meteorologist. I've learned from Mac a lot over the years in traveling escapades covering the Cyclones. Mac will always give me a good forecast. He's the guy who told us when we were in Dayton a few years ago, dude, you're screwed.
Don't drive back.
Yeah.
No, it'll be good. You're going to be up there standing up with me, which I appreciate, helping me out along
wouldn't
the way.
Wouldn't miss it. Who else is Oz? Twin brother?
Twin brother Oz, older brother Scott, and then her two brothers.
Oh, okay.
So it's a
packed
it's
house.
A crew.
It's going to be great.
And then if, you know, we need some broadcasting help, the Walters and Heft will be in attendance. So we'll
that'd be great
time.
To do play-by-play in color of the wedding.
I thought about doing something like that. But, like, I don't want to make those guys work. You know,
that'd be so
well
funny.
I thought about having Walters do the intro, but I was like, I don't want to make John work. He's just there to drink water.
But to keep it consistent, you need Fellingham to do the
intro. Rich Church as well.
He's the pregame.
He could have been the pregame. You get John Quinn in there.
Yeah, you get Fellingham and Quinn to do pregame.
And then Whitford was supposed to show up. I don't know if he is. And you would do a reaction show
Whitford
afterwards.
Whitford and I would do Bloom wedding reaction starting at 1 o'clock in the morning, and we would be hammered. Yeah. That would be a great night.
That's a phenomenal idea.
The question is, would Learfield give you the rights
to
broadcast such an event?
Well, if they do, I'm not sure the Longhorn Network would allow it.
Oh. Well, hey, yeah, congrats on that game.
Oh, thanks. That'll be fun.
Yeah, you and Sage. That's an A-team right there.
Well,
all right.
I saw somebody posted on the Fanatic forums. They posted a picture of a really tall guy and a really short guy. And
that's
going to be
– I get tired of the
digs. No, it's true.
I get tired of it.
That's what it is.
You can't. You were born that way.
But Sage is going to look over the top of me. It'll be fun.
All right, Bloom. Congrats.
Thank you.
We will look forward to the next podcast. Gray will probably be with me next week as Bloom will be off doing whatever Bloom and Crystal are. You guys are honeymooning later on. You're just going to take like a quick trip, right?
A little quick trip.
All right. Mr. B Clothing Podcast, 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. He's Brent Bloom. I'm Chris Williams. So long, everybody.